Kay Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Wallace. The Trump administration has taken another step to dismantle FEMA. CBS's Nicole Skanga has learned the agency's employees will have to submit requests for contract extensions.
The decision impacts thousands of FEMA's core employees, tasked with delivering disaster assistance before and after hurricanes, tornadoes, wildfires, and other federally declared emergencies. Notably, the first responders are uniquely funded through the Disaster Relief Fund, which allows them to operate when disaster strikes through government shutdowns.
The National Weather Service is warning of a critical risk of fire weather in eastern New Mexico and southwest Texas, and an elevated risk in the central and southern plains. Mike Covina lost his home in Mumford, Oklahoma last week.
Once the house caught on fire, about 10 or 15 minutes, it burned.
At least three people were killed and 15 injured in a mass shooting at a park in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Mayor Eric Enriquez.
There's no place for violence like this in our community.
Las Cruces Police Chief Jeremy Story.
The investigation so far reveals that there is an altercation between two groups of people, and that altercation escalated to gunfire between both groups. Several other people were also injured in the crossfire.
The Pentagon is still fuming over the New York Times report that Elon Musk was there yesterday to get a briefing on a war plan against China. Here's Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth.
There was no war plans. There was no Chinese war plans. There was no secret plans. That's not what we were doing at the Pentagon.
CBS's Charlie Daggett reports the Pentagon's investigation into leaks could include polygraph tests.
The brief memo referred to, quote, recent unauthorized disclosures, but did not specifically identify the alleged leaks in question. But it came on the day that Elon Musk visited the Pentagon amid reports furiously denied by President Trump and the Defense Secretary and others that Musk was to receive a classified briefing on China.
A federal judge is spending the weekend deciding whether the Trump administration was justified in using the Alien Enemies Act to deport suspected Venezuelan gang members.
David Beer, director of immigration studies at the Libertarian Cato Institute, says there's no reason to believe the Trump administration's claims about the deportees.
We know we cannot trust any assertions that they're making.
He says even if people could,
that would not be any excuse for doing away with due process for people accused of being in the country illegally, accused of being gang members.
Beer says despite statements by President Trump that there is proof that most of the men are violent criminals.
It's not a legal fact true until it's been proven in a court.
Allison Keyes, CBS News, Washington.
You can hear more on the CBS Weekend Roundup podcast. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy is joining forces with Elon Musk and his new government department to cut 10,000 jobs at the U.S. Postal Service. But staff are pushing back. Nadia Ramlagan reports.
American Postal Workers Union President Mark Diamonstein says older adults, veterans, and others depend on the service's commitment to deliver mail to everyone, regardless of where they live, noting the Postal Service delivers to every address in the country, 169 million addresses, and 318 million pieces of mail every day.
Part of the effort on Thursday is to make the postal customers around the country fully aware of this threat, to what belongs to them.
In a letter to Congress, DeJoy said the agency needs help with lease renewals on its retail centers and tackling the issue of counterfeit postage. The Trump administration has also floated the idea of privatizing the post office. Supporters argue the change would make the Postal Service run more efficiently and save money. Polling from the Pew Research Center finds 72% of Americans have a favorable view of the Postal Service. Local unions in Kentucky are participating in a National Day of Action tomorrow. Diamonstein explains that more than five decades ago, postal workers won collective bargaining rights. He says the union is prepared to fight back on any attempt to weaken union rights or target worker protections and working conditions.
It's also very important, I think, for the public to be reminded that good living wage jobs help our communities. They help make them stronger. That good jobs turn over in the community to restaurants, to small retail stores, to housing.
According to the APWU, privatization would eliminate more than 600,000 living wage union jobs, including those of more than 70,000 military veterans. That's Nadia Ramlagan. I'm Savannah Tome Olson for Civic Media News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Clouds thicken for tonight, a low near 30. Cloudy day for tomorrow with areas of rain and a touch breezy. Highs in the mid-40s. Warming up for the rest of the upcoming week, highs in the 40s to start, 50s by mid and late week. Currently, it's 44 degrees.
Pat Kreitlow. On Monday, we'll talk to the Economics Department Chair at UW-Eau Claire about the hit Wisconsin's going to take in Donald Trump's trade war.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to Hour 2 of the Civic Media Spotlight. First up, we'll hear a segment from Mino and the Mayor out of Green Bay. Jim and John welcome on Cardi Josephson from the Walk to End Alzheimer's, who also brings along a special guest, former Wisconsin Governor Marty Schreiber. Governor Schreiber has recently penned a book called My Two Elaines about the story of caregiving for his wife, Elaine. He writes about having to watch his beloved wife gradually transform from the woman who had gracefully entertained in the executive residence to one who sometimes no longer recognizes him as her husband. Net proceeds from the sales of My Two Elaines will be used to promote Alzheimer's caregiver support programs. Here's their conversation.
Now, back to Mino and the Mayor. Here's John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back, Mino and the Mayor. The Mayor, of course, still on vacation. We've got Dennis Peters filling in for us, and thank you to Mark Hewson. Well, right now, we've got a couple of people that are also involved in a very, very serious thing that, again, I swear affects somebody in everybody's family. Cardi Josephson, of course, from the Alzheimer's Foundation, the Walk to End Alzheimer's coming up, and a very, very special guest. We are honored to have this gentleman, and I'm going to leave that to you, Cardi, to introduce this very distinguished gentleman.
Yes, my sidekick for, well, yesterday and today, former Wisconsin Governor, Mr. Marty Schreiber.
Yeah. Good morning.
Do you want a drum roll, Marty?
You're the first governor we've ever had in our studio.
Is that right? Well, thank you. That's quite an honor then for me to do that.
I didn't want to say this should be one of your top honors in your career, but
yeah. And by the way, I see a happy birthday. Is today your birthday?
It was St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, St. Patrick's Day. Well, happy birthday.
Thank you.
If I would have known it, I would have signed an executive order for being so intelligent and wise.
I work with a former mayor of Green Bay here every single day, and he's never given me an executive order.
Yeah, well, that's.
I think he tried setting one to get me out of town one day. But
was that a restraining order?
Well, maybe that's what it
was.
Is
that what it was?
One of the two. But Cardi, thank you for this beautiful food from Uncle Mike's.
You are welcome, John.
It will not
happy
go to
belated.
Waste. Thank you so very much.
You bet.
First of all, I want to talk to sir, I'd like to talk to you about this book that you wrote. I'm a local author, and I like to write books. But this one, I think, is a very poignant personal story of how you got involved with the Alzheimer's Foundation in a way, because it was personal with your wife, correct, sir?
That's correct. And I'll tell you, had it not been for the Alzheimer's Association, quite frankly, I don't know how I would have made it. My wife experienced and died from Alzheimer's over a period of almost 20 years. And in that period of time, I went through what every caregiver goes through, and that's just the grieving, the anxiety, the worry, the depression, the sadness, the feeling of abandonment, the lonely, all of those things come into play. And if it wouldn't have been for the Alzheimer's, I wouldn't have made it. But the title of my book is My Two Elaines. And the first Elaine is a wonderful woman that I married and had, you know, 4 children, 13 grandchildren, now 11 great-grandchildren.
What a beautiful woman.
But the second Elaine same person began to appear when she was approximately 63, 64 years of age. And she would get lost driving to and from places she had been going to and from for 10 years. A great cook, mess up recipes so badly she would cry, coming up with stories that I couldn't believe she would even imagine. That was the beginning of the second Elaine. And there were some things that I learned too late. We missed out on moments of joy. We could have had greater opportunities to experience helping each other live our best life possible. But I was arrogant. I was self-centered. I said I could do it alone. And I tell you, I got involved with the caregiver's poisons, a little bit of alcohol. And all of a sudden, it began to dawn on me that I was not really serving the one I love by being so self-centered. I was not serving her by refusing to ask for help. I was not serving her by not taking care of myself. So that's why I wrote the book. I want to help caregivers learn, cope, and survive.
But that comes from a place of love, though. You know, you want to be the one that takes care of things. You want to be the one, because that's the role that you do when you say, I do, you know, and to do those things, I think that's very commendable. But yeah, you're right, though. I think it does add up after a while, and it can become, you know, out of your wheelhouse of what you can do. And it's only natural, and I'm just glad that you, like you say, you found the association to help you with
it. But I think on the other hand, too, I think it also opened your eyes just how tough of a foe this is.
Yes.
Because everybody thinks, well, I'm the strong guy. I was governor. I can handle this. But Alzheimer's is such a tough enemy, isn't it, Carrie?
Oh, absolutely. And just caregiving in general, whether you're caring for somebody with Alzheimer's or dementia or any other situation, it takes its toll, and you really can't do it yourself. It's about really having a good support team around you.
I think everybody knows somebody who has been affected by
everybody.
It. And that's it didn't used to be like that. I think it's something that's kind of growing. There's more and more diagnoses.
Yes, exactly.
And it's horrible.
Yes. We're living longer, but also we're getting better about diagnosing it.
One thing I want to make everyone aware of. 40% of caregivers die before their loved one due to stress-related illness.
Really?
A person who is a caregiver has a 60% higher death rate than non-caregivers.
What?
So what the point is that when there is a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, there are two patients, the person who is ill and then also the caregiver. And unless we realize that, we're going to just see caregiving among all of the things in the world is probably one of the most challenging. Because of all of the emotions and experiences you go through as you see your loved one disappear almost daily. And my heart goes out to every caregiver, to every family who is dealing with this Alzheimer's disease. And that comes us right down to what Carrie is about, and that is to help people better learn, cope, and survive, making sure we get the research involved. And if I could encourage anything, it's to get involved with Carrie, the Alzheimer's Association, and their walk.
You know what? I've just in the ones from my family members where I've dealt with this, okay? The one thing that, again, why this is such a vicious thing is because there will be moments of total clarity of you're talking to that exact same person you've known your whole life, and then 10 minutes later, you don't recognize the person. They don't recognize you. That's got to be an extremely frustrating feeling, right?
Well, so Elaine was in assisted living for roughly 8.5 years, so we're having lunch. And she's beginning to cry. And she looks at me, and I said, why are you crying? Well, she says, I'm beginning to love you more than my husband. Well, I didn't ask her what's wrong with her turkey husband. I didn't do that at all. But the point is, and what is so important, it was not necessary for her to know my name in order for our hearts to touch.
Sure.
And many times people say, well, that person doesn't recognize me. Well, I don't want any. No, hearts can touch by holding a hand, by giving a hug, by singing a song, by giving a smile. And so people could please understand that.
I've learned that, too. It's.
I just want to reintroduce you. We're with Carrie Josephson, Alzheimer's Foundation, Marty Schreiber, former governor for the state of Wisconsin, who wrote a phenomenal book, it looks like, My Two Elaines, talking about learning, coping, and surviving as an Alzheimer's caregiver.
That's a beautiful picture of the two of you, by the way. That's fantastic.
Well, thank you. That goes back, maybe when we were 22 or 23 years old, and I know I look only 39, but I'm 85, but you can get sort of a pushback.
I think it's a beautiful thing that you said regarding the conversation with your wife, that I've learned something, too, what you meet them where they're at. Mm-hmm. And from that point, that's where you can get the traction on the communication and whatnot. And I think it's a beautiful thing that you shared that.
Okay, what you just said is brilliant. It's the key to it, joining their world. As long as we try and keep them in our world, it's impossible.
Right.
And so, but to join them where they are at is one of the most important, best things you can do, both for the person ill as well as the caregiver and the entire family.
Carrie, could you put that into words, what you've seen in people doing that?
I think what Marty's talking about is, you know, sometimes people, you know, they get a diagnosis and the caregivers maybe don't understand exactly, you know, what they're dealing with. And, you know, it can get tiring when, you know, the person is repeating themselves or asking the same question over and over or saying something that's not at all correct. But it's really about not battling with them. You know, does it matter if they think that it's 3 p.m. instead of 9 a.m? I know Marty talks oftentimes about his wife wanting to have a glass of wine in the morning. Who cares? Just roll with it.
Before I went to print with the book, I find a series of notes and journals that Elaine had been keeping. Each chapter begins with some of Elaine's notes or journals. That gives us a thorough understanding of what it's like to be diagnosed with this disease, to have all of those questions come into mind, to think you're normal, to not think you're normal, to worry about whether or not things are going along, what's going to happen in the future, and then to get angry with. People have told me that that book has really made a difference in their life, helping them learn, cope, and survive. And the notes that Elaine wrote that are in the book gives us that kind of insight.
What is the process like of going from, I think maybe I'm not quite, not like I used to be, for example, how does that process start to getting diagnosis aspect of it? I mean, what kind of time span are we talking about? And, you know, from that aspect, what was your experience like?
Well, she was getting lost, as I said, going to and from places. And I was in refusal. You know, I didn't want to accept that. I didn't want to accept
denial,
that at all.
Kind of?
I was denial.
Yeah.
And so we finally went to a family doctor who said, you better check this out. And so we went to a psychiatrist. They have what they call the mini test. What day is it? Who's president of the United States? Do you use Brill cream for your hair? All those kinds of things.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Vitalis.
You know, I got these. Okay, I'm reading these things from her notes.
Yes.
Wow, you're not hiding anything with what she said here.
I didn't want to.
I got this one. Date unknown, but this is from your wife, Elaine. I wish my Alzheimer's would dissipate. I'd like to be the smart wife and mother I used to be. Now I have to waste so much time just trying to figure out what I should be doing without seeming as smart as I used to be. I need to rely on Marty for everything, and I'm very lucky he continues to keep me. Life gets more difficult every day.
And so if you read further, she gets to the point where she gets very angry with me because she felt I was controlling her. I want you to know that when we had prayed together and we had cried together, but until I read her notes did I ever understand the courage that it takes to be diagnosed with this illness and go forward. And never did I realize that. Elaine, it didn't happen on a Thursday. It happened on a Friday. Elaine, it wasn't the Smith's or John. What is going on is, why is she being criticized for thinking things? She didn't know what she said when she said it. And so I wrote the book. I want to help caregivers learn, cope, and survive. I want to have that journey, as challenging as it is, to be as fruitful and as productive of happy moments as possible.
I just want to read one thing. I believe this is from you, a little excerpt you have in there. What I wish I had known, asking others to help does not mean you're not strong enough or not trying hard enough.
I try and drive home the point that to ask for help means you're not giving up. And also to not ask for help is a sign of arrogance.
Okay, one more I want to read. I should have enlisted a couple of friends to be my team captains who could do the asking and scheduling for me. That's a very practical thing in that aspect.
Well, there again, it's a selfishness. I can do it myself.
Right.
And in the meantime, I'm sort of digging my own grave because I'm not taking care of myself.
Wow, this is fascinating. We got to send a quick break. We'll be back with more. Carrie Josephson and Marty Schreiber, former Wisconsin governor, walk to L's to end Alzheimer's. We'll talk about that when we come back. Okay, Carrie?
All right.
Great. Thanks.
Got my chips cash in. Keep Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Your new choice. Real news. Great conversation. 540 WAUK.
Celebrate the women who have helped shape the world as we honor Women's History Month with powerful stories of Wisconsin's own. We acknowledge the courageous efforts of Dickie Chappelle. She defied expectations to become the first female war correspondent, reporting from the front lines of World War II and the Korean conflict. editors at Life Magazine and National Geographic, called the Milwaukee area woman one of the most respected reporters of her time. Chappelle was 40 years old when she took up parachuting. She then made history by becoming the first woman to be approved by the Pentagon to jump into combat with American troops. Sadly, while on assignment in Vietnam in 1965, she was killed by a landmine. She was the first correspondent, male or female, to die in action. Her fearless pursuit of truth in the face of danger remains an inspiration to us all. We recognize the powerful women from the past and those who are still writing their own history today. I'm Brittany Merlau.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to the John and Gordy Show down in Madison. Every week, John and Gordy talk with Pam Yonke, the fabulous farm babe and host of the Midwest Farm Report. This time around, they talk chocolate milk. And also a new study out showing just how rural Wisconsin is these days.
WMDX 92.7, John and Gordy in the morning, broadcasting from the capital city, Madison, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Chilly start this morning, about 33 degrees. Highs today in the mid-50s, a mix of clouds and some sunshine. We'll check in with Brittany Merlot in about an hour and get the latest on the weekend weather. Right now, Pam Yonke is with us. Good morning, Pam, from Midwest Farm Report.
Morning,
how you doing?
Yep.
How you
doing?
Good.
Doing good.
I was talking to somebody yesterday that came through the building, and they were a little bit shocked at our weather. I'm like, wait a minute. It's the first day of, yesterday was the first day of spring. I said, right. It's Wisconsin boys basketball. I said, if you're a homer like me and grew up in this state, you could just about predict what we were going to have with the weather this week. So safe travels to everybody that's coming back to Madison for the rest of the playoff weekend.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, yes. That's
well. Let's hope they're drinking a lot of milk while they're here.
Well, yeah, I was telling you guys that's one thing that we've been kind of bringing up in conversations from time to time. How the dairy farmers of Wisconsin is one of the strong messages you'll see in a lot of the sport venues for high school athletes is reminding them that chocolate milk has been scientifically proven to be one of the best ways to recharge after a workout. And a lot of school systems, through the help of their dairy farmers, have actually put coolers in their locker rooms so that when the athletes come off the field or off the floor and are kind of looking to rebuild after a game, they have nice ice-cold chocolate milk to help their bodies do it.
Well, I love chocolate milk.
Yeah, me too.
It's the best. It really is. Didn't they take it out of the menu for a while, school lunch menu?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You very rarely will you see chocolate milk on even the low-fat chocolate milk. It has a dilly of a time trying to get onto school lunch menus. That's kind of a never-ending anthem out in Washington, D.C. by a lot of dairy farm advocates is trying to just get the right milk into schools at the right temperature in the right containers to keep it attractive to kids. It's semantics.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. Well, now there's a new research facility that you mentioned to us off the air, and they're taking a look at the real makeup of Wisconsin's rural community. And this sounds pretty interesting, actually. What did they come up with?
I did a poll this morning on my early show and just asked people, do you think Wisconsin is still rural? I mean, if you think about it, a lot of us are of the age where we might have grown up rural, but obviously Wisconsin's dynamics have changed quite a little bit. So there's a group called the Rural Policy Institute. It started last July. It is not an advocacy group. It's not a lobbying group. It's basically a group that's trying to answer these kinds of questions for policy development in the future. They're not going to introduce policy or anything like that. They just want to be a think tank of sorts to try to provide information in areas where there hasn't been any. This is one of the first things that they tackled. And basically what they found is you really got to define what is rural. A I'll give you an example. So you guys know where Waupaca is, right? Up in kind of the central Sands area. Okay, now that's a perfect example of rural adjacent, they call it. So Waupaca's probably, I don't know, I haven't looked lately, but it's probably got a population of about, what, five to 10,000 people, right?
That sounds right,
It's in kind of the middle of nowhere, no disrespect to the central Sands, but Waupaca is surrounded by rural. So those are the kinds of things they're pointing out. Same thing for some of you that go up to Rhinelander. Rhinelander's probably got a population, maybe 10, 12,000, but it's surrounded by rural. So what they've done in this scientific breakout is take a look at population densities and where they're at in Wisconsin. And it looks like it's about 40% very rural, probably about another 20% we could call rural adjacent. You've got about 40% your Green Bay's, La Crosse's, Eau Claire's, Madison's, Milwaukee's that would be urban, and then you've got the remaining percentage that are in kind of the suburbs, shall we say. But it's really all designed to try to make sure that people that are elected from areas like Milwaukee, Madison, Green Bay, pay attention to the fact that the policy that they're putting in play has a major impact on rural and rural adjacent citizens.
Well, that's interesting.
Interesting study. Yeah. Pam, we got a question from a listener. Let me just throw this question in the mix here from a listener. John and Gordy ask Pam what we can do to protect family farms from huge corporate farm takeovers. That's kind of a big question, but what's your take on that?
Maybe we tackle that at another time. I think it's a question that's worth discussing, but it's a big one, and it all goes back to a lot of it is family dynamics. What are you going to do if the kids don't want to farm? Mom and dad can only do it for so long. You have to try to come up with a succession transition plan. Maybe you reach out to the kids' neighbor friends that's still farming. That's what I've mentioned to you guys before. I get riled up a little bit when people say, we're losing farms. We're not losing farms. They're just looking different. The cows go to the neighbors. The land is rented by the neighbors, but that farm is still there. So I appreciate the question. I really do. And we talk about it a lot, but it might be a little big for us to tear into in a couple minutes on the Gordy and John show.
Gotcha. Oh, by thank you for getting the billing right on the name of the show. Appreciate that.
One time.
Never mind, John. All right. You missed it.
I'm just, I was actually just contemplating the other topic we were going to talk about, and that is the milk movement. You know, what is that all about?
Well, really, it's kind of helping consumers better understand how dairying is changing. Now, Wisconsin is still obviously very robust. We're number two in the nation as far as milk production, but things are changing. We're starting to see big, major cheese plants going in places like South Dakota. South Dakota? Kansas.
Wow, Dakota.
Kansas? Strange things like that. And I'm not just talking little ones. These are whoppers, fellas. And it's something that we've got to kind of keep in mind when it comes to Wisconsin's dairy competitive edge and making sure that we're recognizing, you know, just like our lives on a daily basis, the dairy industry and its look and its flow of milk changing too. We might be sending some Wisconsin milk to Kansas to help them power that cheese plant that they're bringing online. But like I said, I thought it was worth reminding people that, holy Moses, milk moves a long distance in the United States, and we're lucky we've got as many cheesemakers in Wisconsin to use local use of it.
Well, that champion cheesemaker was from Wisconsin. He's now in another state, so we're importing the cheesemakers and now the milk. So what the heck?
There you go. All good. All right, Pam. Well, thank you very much. We hope you have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again Monday morning. Thank you.
All right, buddy. It's always a pleasure. Have a good one.
You too. Pam Yonke from the Midwest Farm Report. That's actually coming up right around the corner right here. And then it's Idiocracy time on John and Gordy in the Morning, WMDX for a Friday. Good morning.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
A new choice, Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
CBS News Brief. CBS News has learned the Trump administration will require many FEMA employees to reapply for their jobs. Bob Deans with the National Resources Defense Council is concerned.
The administration is intentionally hobbling the nation's ability to prepare for and respond to wildfires, hurricanes, heat waves, and other disasters.
Several areas of the country are at risk for wildfires right now, including some plain states. North Carolina's Forest Service has issued a burn ban.
Until we see a significant amount of rainfall in the form of inches, this burn ban is going to remain in effect until further notice.
No arrests have been made after three people were killed and 15 wounded in a mass shooting at a park in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Police Chief Jeremy Story.
There have not been arrests or anyone detained. We have leads that we're pursuing, but we are also asking the public or anyone that might have information to please provide that.
The victims were attending a car show at the park. CBS News Brief. I'm Michael Wallace.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Badgers basketball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It's Wisconsin against the Brigham Young Cougars. Tonight in the NCAA basketball tournament, Badgers head coach Greg Gard asked what team in the Big Ten reminds him of BYU.
Ourselves, for one. Illinois, a little bit. Illinois shoots a lot of threes. I think BYU may have even more shooters than Illinois. Obviously, for any team that's playing right now is really good.
Marquette's season is over. The Golden Eagles lost to New Mexico by 9. 75-66. Head coach Shaka Smart on letting the game slip away.
When we took the lead in the second half, we could really feel a level of momentum. We weren't able to win that next swing minute and just some mistakes that cost us on both ends of the floor.
In hockey, the Wisconsin Badgers women's hockey team skated to a 6-2 win over Minnesota last night. They'll face Ohio State tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock for the national championship in Minneapolis. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Clouds thicken for tonight, a low near 30. Cloudy day for tomorrow with areas of rain and a touch breezy. Highs in the mid-40s. Warming up for the rest of the upcoming week, highs in the 40s to start, 50s by mid and late week. Currently, it's 44 degrees.
Judge Brad Schimmel surrounds himself with extremists. He's supported by national and state anti-abortion organizations because he opposes abortion rights. But don't take my word for it. Hear it from Schimmel himself. When asked about abortion, he said,
"We have to shut this down. We have to shut this down."
When asked about Wisconsin's abortion ban, which doesn't include exceptions for rape, incest, or help of the mother,
"The 1849 ban on abortions, which, by the way, what is flawed about that law? What is flawed about that law?"
Brad Schimmel takes the side of extremists and would place politicians in charge of decisions that individuals should be making. By taking the side of extremists, he's not listening to Wisconsin residents. Tell Judge Brad Schimmel, keep extremist politics out of our court decisions. Call 262-548-7548. That's 262-548-7548. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together Incorporated.
540 AM WAUK presents This Week in Waukesha, now a weekly podcast.
Hey, it's Downtown Danny Brown, and this week in Waukesha, I have my first double feature podcast with Deanna Trouse of Truth in Common, talking about how we at the local level can address misinformation and build a more informed community and hopefully preserve democratic values in our community and nationwide. It's going to be a great show. Join us, civicmedia.us/shows.
You can find This Week in Waukesha every week online at waukradio.com.
Matt Nair on air.
You may say to yourself, "Self, what if I want to contact Doge and let him know that I'm unhappy with these cuts?"
Do you know who had the same idea? Congressman Mark Pocan.
We couldn't get that number off the Doge website, and they literally just said that there is no one that you can speak to, and they didn't provide anything.
The administration of transparency. But you can't talk to anybody. That's okay.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Dom Selvia.
Next time, our favorite Delano Democrat Harvey Kay will discuss the threats posed to Social Security by the Trump administration. Does calling about missing Social Security payments make you a fraudster? Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show. Weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
we return you now to the Civic Media Spotlight. Up next, we'll hear a segment from the Dom Salvia Show, along with co-host for the day, Matt Rothschild. They talk with Julie Bomar, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, about the devastating impact of President Trump's service cuts on Wisconsin farmers and food-insecure populations. The program's cut in Wisconsin also linked farmers directly to schools, providing high-quality, nutritious food for students.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. It's a talk line. It's a text line. Usually it works. We're working on it right now, but be patient. We appreciate everyone. Matt Rothschild joining me today. Jess P.S. is on the board, and I'm jazzed as hell to introduce to you our next guest. Her name, Julie Bomar. She's the executive director from the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Julie, welcome to the Dom Salvia Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
It is our pleasure. The administration, the federal administration, the Trump administration, making all sorts of changes. And we reported on this quite a bit yesterday, so this is a timely interview. We appreciate you joining us. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is saying that the Trump administration canceled a program that paid Wisconsin farmers to grow food for food pantries. And one of the statistics that stood out to me that I was unaware of and it's still kind of shocking to me is that more than 617,000 Wisconsin residents are food insecure. 617,000 Wisconsin residents are food insecure. Julie, what's your impression on how this is going to impact not only those 617,000 Wisconsin residents, but the farmers that provide that food to those pantries?
It's going to have devastating effects. The local food purchase assistance program has been in effect for several years now. And, you know, COVID really woke us all up, right, to the problems in the supply chain and how we don't really have access to fresh food. If anything happens, it's a fragile food system. And so there were some monies that were made available at that time. And really what happened is it just helped develop a structure that could provide food insecure people with fresh, nutritious, protein-ridden food that was locally grown by farmers, by their neighbors, and it benefited groups of farmers that don't often benefit from the Farm Bill. And it developed a great infrastructure across the entire state so that smaller farmers could actually participate in the food system in a way that they hadn't before. It's had a hell of an impact, and we're really, really upset that contracts and promises are broken.
Apparently, the USDA Deputy Administrator, Jack Tuckwiller, wrote when they sent a letter canceling this program that this program, quote, no longer effectuates agency priorities. Then I'm wondering,
that's bureaucratic talk for you.
what is the USDA priority then, Julie, if not to assist farmers in at least this kind of way? Because the farmers get all sorts of other assistance, right? This isn't the only assistance that we as taxpayers provide to our farmers for our agriculture and our food supply chain and all that. Why is it that this one is being targeted, in your opinion?
Well, I think that it was focused on farmers that don't often maybe meet the stereotypical definition of farmer in the United States. And so commodity growers, big commodity growers, may often benefit from subsidy programs, from insurance and benefits like that by way of growing commodities. A lot of the smaller growers, which actually are all across Wisconsin, we have a very diversified agricultural landscape. Many of those farmers do not get to benefit in the same ways. They may be a specialty crop grower, and then you don't get subsidies, from the United States government. You may be growing hay, and you don't get subsidies from the United States government, whereas the big guys, the big boys of it all do. They're at least more eligible for it. So this one really targeted those folks that are often left out in the Farm Bill by helping them get into these food systems, these highways, if you will, that literally can distribute food in smaller, more local quantities and qualities.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That is Julie Bomar, the executive director from the Wisconsin Farmers Union. According to the reporting, Julie, the program, 289 Wisconsin farms participated in the program, providing $4.2 million worth of food to more than 250 pantries and schools. I mean, so this impacts everybody regardless of ideological or political leaning. Julie, I'm assuming you have all sorts of political stripes in your organization. How are folks reacting to this?
Well, it's really been interesting to watch all of the federal actions and how they're impacting folks. We have a big tent organization, lots of different kinds of growers, and we did a survey just a few weeks ago to see how the federal decisions were affecting people, and all different kinds of stories came out. And so it kind of depends on what sector you're in and how you've been directly impacted, but the stories are varied, and almost universally there's been negative impact on our members. There are a few who wrote in that they're hopeful that maybe tariffs and things like that will help them in some way, because they may be a smaller producer and they're hoping that the local folks will have to buy more food from them because the costs are going to go up on imported foods. So, there has been some differences in opinion, but the vast majority of folks that have written in and have showed up at our town halls are saying this negatively impacts them.
Julie, you have folks, farmers with different political leanings. Do you know any that have expressed little buyer's remorse to you? They voted for Trump and now, holy smokes, he's taking our programs away. He's taking our subsidies away.
I haven't had anybody just come up and say they had buyer's remorse. I mean, certainly farmers are not a monolith. We all know that, right? There are differences of opinion. They may say, I kind of am waiting to see what happens in this area. I don't like what's happening over here. I think it's an overreach. So I think it's not necessarily an easy yes or no or buyer's remorse or not. But a lot of folks, of course, didn't vote for Trump either. So they didn't go into this with those kinds of expectations.
I drive down 94 between Madison and Milwaukee, and I'm always surprised at these huge Trump signs in the farmers' fields. I'm just scratching my head, what is it that Trump has given these folks that make them so zealous in favor of him? Do you have any clue on that?
Well, I think we've had 4 decades, multiple administrations to demonstrate that the Farm Bill doesn't work for all farmers. And so whether you're Democrat or Republican, you probably have a beef with the way that the federal government is managing helping shape the food system. And so, there's a lot of folks that really believe that big ag and big pharma need to go, and they maybe saw a disruptor that could change and help shake those things loose. I think that certainly is an opinion by some. Others may have a lot of trouble with the regulatory control that we see at the state and the federal level as well. So there's a large factor of reasons that people may choose this. I think one thing that I can say that working in the farm community for a long time, that farmers believe contracts should be honored. And so that one's really, they're not being honored.
And one of those contracts is to schools. I mean, fresh food for school lunches, those are being cut. And, I thought this was a great program so the kids can have something, fresher than tater tots that are deep fried, when the local farmers bring in food to the school. And how many schools are going to be impacted by this cut on this program?
Oh, there's 30 just up in my region and the small few county area. It's going to be massive if you look across the state. And we have close to 300 food pantries that are going to be impacted by the termination of the local food purchase assistance program, close to 300 farmers. It is going to have a big impact. I also happen to sit on a board of directors for a local food bank, and they're very concerned about how they're going to be procuring fresh meat, fresh eggs, and all those high quality things that they were getting from the program, and especially because they were counting on it. Remember, a lot of the farmers are already planting right now in their greenhouses. They agreed to uphold their end of the bargain, and they're put out the work, they put out the money, and now that's going to be cut. That's what's so irritating, I think, to many, is that it's just a matter of integrity.
So that violation of that contract, of that word that the government gave them, is so galling to them right now, on top of the fact that they're going to have an economic negative impact too.
Absolutely.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That is Julie Bomar, executive director from the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Matt Rothschild joining us today as well. Some of the reporting continuing on this, this Stepping Stones of Dunn County, they use this program to provide 50,000 pounds of food to its clients. And apparently, this pantry feeds more than 11% of Dunn County. Now, I know some of these counties don't have a lot of people, but 11% is a lot of people. That's a big percentage of the population. I don't care how many people are in that county, Julie. And this is all to save, if I'm understanding the math here, is this like a $4-some million program? Is that's what's being cut here?
Yeah, exactly. And it was really run efficiently. How much more efficient can you get than shipping locally, right? And the money stays in the economy. It's not going out to Walmart and then to Arkansas. I mean, this is like literally an economic booster for rural economies as well. So it was run effectively. And I lived in Dunn County for 30 some years. I remember talking to physicians. I did a lot of research on rural poverty in a previous career. There are people who are malnourished, not just like they cannot leave their community to go in to these food pantries. So these pop-up pantries and things that they have in rural Wisconsin are critical for people who cannot afford to even drive into town. And so it is incredibly serious. And I think, you know, most people, regardless of their political affiliation, agree that we should try to keep things efficient and local and do the best that we can for those folks that are literally, malnourished.
Well, and I think it was just brought up, and I want to reiterate it again. This is fresh farm food. You know, these aren't bags of chips. These aren't, you know, processed by big food manufacturing. This is money that's being circulated through the local economy more than once. Right. We hear people about that are hiring some part time help to help, you know, to help them in these endeavors. Well, that also, you know, it creates employment. It creates food security. It creates a secure food supply lines. As you mentioned before, COVID really exposed a lot of these concerns. So as a literally a, as an investment on the dollar, it's hard to think of another program that would have the impact that this program, and it's I hate to say $4 million is not a big program, but it's really not, especially when you consider some of the monies that, I don't know, the president of the United States spends when he goes in Air Force One to go golfing, I believe, at about $3.5 million per when he's got to pull out the plane. You know, these efforts are being done, Julie, to effectuate a justification for trillions of dollars in tax cuts. And people can have an opinion whether or not they think that's righteous or just. Are your members and the people in your communities, do they recognize that this is the impetus for all of this? That's why we're doing this, is to justify and pay for tax cuts.
I think that there's more work needs to be done on connecting the dots there for sure, Dom. I think that a lot of folks were excited, you know, maybe about more efficient government or wasteful programs being targeted, and they maybe didn't sign up for the kinds of cuts that we're seeing, and they weren't sure where they were going to be targeted. But rural America is going to be hit particularly lopsidedly in all of this. And, people, I think, are starting to put it together.
Do you have a moment to come around on the next segment as well? I want to ask about tariffs and what you saw as the impact currently and perhaps what was done in the past. But while we have just this one segment, appreciate your time. The local politicians in these areas, has there been any discussions? Have they shown up at any of the meetings? Have they, you know, provided any insight, right, left, regardless of their political leanings? Are they involved in the community, and what are their thoughts? Have you heard anything?
We've heard a lot from local elected officials. We did have a town hall that we sponsored a few weeks ago. We offered it open to representatives. We're a nonpartisan organization. We invite everybody. And the only folks to show up were on the Democratic side of the aisle. Although I have seen, signs that GOP representatives are visiting food pantries and food banks. So that's good to see. We were disappointed that they didn't show up.
Folks are listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Come back with us. Julie Bomar, executive director from Wisconsin Farmers Union. Matt Rothschild as well. Jess P.S. working on the board. I want to get into some of the tariff conversations and what you're hearing on the current situation. Plus, I want to get your feedback on how it went the last time Donald Trump started a
The Dom Salvia Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 4 till 6. To learn more about this show and all the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
a voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. The Army National Guard has taught me the value of showing respect to those I come in contact with each day. My service also allows me to be there for my community in ways others can't. I help my hometown recover after nature strikes. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my country and those I care about safe from threats. I also work with a network of professionals that help me succeed and accomplish the mission. Plus, the Army National Guard education benefits make getting a higher education a reality. Being an Army National Guard soldier makes living and serving in my community more rewarding every day. Learn how you too can live and serve part-time, close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Closing out this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we go to Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. The Schwabinator welcomes on Up North News' Christina Laurie to talk about the best frozen pizzas in Wisconsin and some inventions you might not know were from this great state.
Twice as much frozen pizza as the rest of the country. Wisconsin is the frozen pizza capital of the world. These are just some of the fun things you learn when you read Up North News, which is edited by our current guest, Christina Laurie, who joins us over the stream. Christina, here are some other fun facts that I thought were very funny. Pizza facts. 30% of Americans eat pizza at least once a week. 22% say they can finish an entire pie by themselves. That sounds like bragging. I'm not sure it should be. And then 19% enjoy a beer with their pizza. Seems like it should be higher.
All of those stats, I don't know, to me, don't they seem a little low? I feel like we yeah. might have a few liars because yes. I do think that more people than are admitting could finish an entire pizza.
I agree. I get like this spinach mushroom pizza, very thin crust. I can polish that up. It's only like the whole pizza is like 900 calories. You know, it's not like I'm bragging, but some of them are smaller.
No, it cracks me up. Like to look at the serving sizes sometimes on those frozen pizzas in grocery stores. It says like serve six. And I'm like, no, this looks like a personal pizza. There is a funny quote that said any pizza is a personal pizza. With enough hard work and determination.
That was probably created in Wisconsin. It said, this is interesting too. Favorite topping was cheese. That shouldn't even be, I feel like that's not even a topping really. It just kind of comes with the pizza. But then it says, followed by pepperoni, 66%, sausage, 58%, and mushrooms, 53%. That surprised me. I know Conrad's shaking his head. He loves mushrooms on pizza, but were you surprised by that?
Oh, absolutely. I don't believe in vegetables on pizza. I believe in vegetables separately, but I don't want them touching
right.
my pizza.
Have a salad. Keep them off the pizza. And then one more piece of pizza tidbit I thought was interesting in what you wrote. Favorite chain, Pizza Hut, 31%, followed by Papa John's, 22%, and Domino's at 17%. I see Domino's vehicles all over the place. That surprised me. Like Pizza Hut almost doubling Domino's.
I completely agree with you. And out of those three, I do personally prefer Domino's.
Yeah, I do too. They make a pretty good thin crust pizza, I will say, for what it is, you know.
Yeah. Again, I will never say no to a pizza.
All right. So now that we've gotten everybody hungry, let's talk. You did another article about three inventions or three things that were created more or less in Wisconsin. Another great thing that you learn at Up North News, just informative. Stem cells, Social Security. Can you elaborate on these things that you wrote about?
Absolutely. So I'm glad that I'm not the only one that's surprised by these findings. I mean, I've lived in Wisconsin now for 8 years. I know many of your listeners have probably been, you know, lifelong Wisconsinites, but still, I mean, working in news for 8 years, I feel like I should know most things about the state. And every day I'm just like learning new things that were started here, a person who was from here, someone who has family living here. And these inventions just kind of like caught me off guard. So weather satellites, incredibly important for predicting, not predicting, actually forecasting the weather, especially now that there are so many, you know, layoffs of local meteorologists. Those are so important. That started here in the late 1950s. A lot of these inventions started at the UW-Madison. It was just like a hotbed of innovation. Social Security also started there. It's just incredible. So if there are any Badger alum, you probably know Whitty Hall. That's named after the father of Social Security, Edwin Whitty.
I love when I find stuff like that out. Like my son went to Madison. He lived on Doty Street. And then I was in the Edgewater Hotel once and I saw a picture of a guy named Doty. I'm like, oh, there you go. Same thing with Whitty Hall. I was going to ask you about that. So he's got a dorm named after him and he created Social Security. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I mean, FDR, one of just kind of the most.
Certainly the longest serving.
You say nowadays. Yeah. I was going to say most admired, but nowadays I don't know if that's accurate. I hope it would. He's definitely one of the most impactful presidents. Sure. He handpicked Whitty to serve on committee on economic security, which helped create the Social Security Act of 1935, which 66 million people benefit from today. So that's a huge impact from just one Badger. And then last thing that was created here was just the entire process of space-based astronomy. It's pretty crazy just considering geographically how far away Wisconsin is from any of the places you typically associate with NASA. You know, you'd see rockets taking off from mainly Florida or sometimes Texas. But we are really just like pushing the forward space innovation. We have a great astronomical observatory here and the first iteration of the famous Hubble telescope.
This might have been a separate article, but you talked about how the beginning of the stem cell research process started at UW. I mean, that's a pretty big deal too. It just, you read this stuff, it just makes you kind of proud, right?
Oh, very proud. Actually, so the fluid that they use when they perform transplants, like a kidney transplant or a liver transplant, it's actually called UW solution universally because that solution was created at the University of Wisconsin.
That's so great.
So, I mean, that's just such a life-saving innovation.
And one more thing along these lines I thought was interesting is, like, you know, you grow up and when you move here, and even before I moved here, from Chicago, I'd heard about Vince Lombardi my whole life and how beloved he was, even by people in Chicago. Like, he's this iconic, famous coach. How much of a supporter he was of civil rights. That was a great article. Let's pick up here. Can you stick around for a few more minutes? Can we keep you just for a few more minutes? I know you have practice pretty soon behind you at the football field there, but we'll get you over there on time.
Christina, get ready for coach.
Christina Laurie is here. We're talking Vince Lombardi, and then we're going to talk pancakes before we let her go. We're having fun here at Nightlight with the editor of Up North News. It's Pete Schwabe and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. Great to have you.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming,
your new choice, real news, great conversation, 540 WAUK.
Jane Matinere and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we've got Angela Lang from Block here as our co-host for the day. Also, Representative Darren B. Madison, and This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Join us.
Matinere on air, weekday mornings at 10.
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this Civic Media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of Civic Media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Wallace. CBS News has learned the Trump administration is looking to make more cuts at FEMA by requiring employees to reapply for their jobs. Bob Deans with the National Resources Defense Council worries the cuts will hamper disaster relief.
These disasters are coming at us like a runaway train.
More from CBS's Nicole Skanga.
In an email labeled hiring update obtained by CBS News, FEMA informed employees Friday of a new hiring process, overhauling contract renewals for more than two-thirds of the agency's workforce. The decision has created fears that the new process will effectively gut the majority of FEMA's workforce over the next 2 to 4 years by forcing employees to reapply for their jobs.
More than 200 FEMA probationary employees have already been fired. From the plains to the Carolinas, some areas of the country are at an elevated risk for wildfires. WSPA